It was an important job, Miss Rooney explained, for although the company specialised in watch faces, they also had a lucrative government contract to supply luminous airplane instruments. Given there was a war raging in Europe, business was booming. The company also used its paint to make gun sights, ships' compasses and more shine brightly in the dark. And when lives were hanging in the balance, the dials had to be perfect. I was to see that the number outlines were even and thorough and to correct minor defects, Catherine recalled. Miss Rooney introduced her to her trainer, May Cubberley, and then left the girls to it, resuming her slow march up and down the rows of painting girls, casting a watchful eye over their shoulders. May smiled at Catherine as she said hello. A 26-year-old dial painter, May had been with the company since the previous fall. Although she was new to the industry when she joined, she already had a reputation as a brilliant painter, regularly turning in 8 to 10 trays of dials daily. There were either 24 or 48 dials in each tray, depending on the dial size. She had quickly been promoted to training other girls in the hope that they would match her productivity. Now, in the little side room, she picked up a paintbrush to instruct Catherine in the technique that all the dial painters and inspectors were taught. They were using slim, camel hair brushes with narrow wooden handles. One dial painter recalled, "I had never seen a brush as fine as that. I would say it possibly had about 30 hairs in it. It was exceptionally fine." Yet as fine as the brushes were, the bristles had a tendency to spread, hampering the girls' work. The smallest pocket watch they painted measured only 3.5 centimetres across its face, meaning the tiniest element for painting was a single millimetre in width. The girls could not go over the edges of these delicate parameters or there would be hell to pay. They had to make the brushes even finer, and there was only one way they knew of to do that. "We put the brushes in our mouths," Catherine said, quite simply. It was a technique called lip pointing, inherited from the first girls who had worked in the industry, who came from China painting factories. Unbeknown to the girls, it wasn't the way things were done in Europe, where dial painting had been in operation for over a decade. Different countries had different techniques, but in none was lip pointing used. Very likely, this was because brushes weren't used either. In Switzerland, there were solid glass rods. In France, small sticks with cotton wadding on the ends. Other European studios employed a sharpened wooden stylus or metal needles. However, American girls did not take up the lip pointing technique with blind faith. May said that when she first started, not long after the studio had opened in 1916, she and her colleagues had questioned it, being a little bit leery about swallowing the radium. "The first thing we asked," she remembered, "was, does this stuff hurt you?" And they said, no. Mr. Savoy said that it wasn't dangerous, that we didn't need to be afraid. After all, radium was the wonder drug. The girls, if anything, should benefit from their exposure. They soon grew so used to the brushes in their mouths that they stopped even thinking about it. But for Catherine, it felt peculiar that first day as she lip-pointed over and over, correcting defective dials. Yet it was worth persevering. She was constantly reminded why she wanted to work there. Her job involved two types of inspection, daylight and darkroom, and it was in the darkroom that the magic really happened. She would call the girls in to discuss their work and observed, "Here in the room, daylight barred. One could see evidences of the luminous paint everywhere on the worker. There was a dab here and there on her clothes, on the face and lips, on her hands. As some of them stood there, they fairly shone in the dark." They looked glorious, like otherworldly angels.